So the flowering lotus, which is the expression of the Dharma and the whole universe, turns the flowering universe, which is our life, on Friday mornings we chant the setting in motion, the wheel of Dhamma Sutra. This wheel of the Buddha is like the wheels on a cart. Buddha's teaching on suffering and our liberation from suffering was just the cart we wanted to jump in on and travel throughout our lives. And a couple of centuries later, another wheel-turning Dharma appeared in the world. Maybe they were the exact words of the Buddha that finally emerged. Or maybe sincere practitioners of the Buddha way evolved the second turning of the wheel to reflect the life and times that they were currently living in. One Japanese scholar says that after Buddha's death, the practice of the way became a little bit stiff, a little bit exclusive to the monks in the monastery, that almost like self-improvement for a chosen few. The scholarly work of these early monks was invaluable to all of us, but it took a while for that work and that practice to make its way into the lives of those outside the monastery. So it was for this reason it was felt that this practice was getting a little stiff. And this Japanese scholar who was describing the emergence of Mahayana practice in the first century before the Christian era and around the beginning of the Christian era, said that there was a band of Buddha practitioners that called themselves bodhisattvas, that called themselves the awakened beings, like a little club. Maybe this lively group that put itself together and said, you know, we can be a sangha. We can practice the Buddha way together. We'll call ourselves the awakened ones, just the way the Buddha called himself the awakened one. And this band appreciated practicing together. Maybe they took up cooking soup on Fridays for each other and for other people. and they worked on Buddha's teaching of the five skandhas and dropping the self that was based on the five skandhas, so that they wouldn't be grasping so tightly and causing themselves and others suffering. They worked on that teaching and found the teaching, or started practicing the teaching of emptiness or suchness. Not only did they want to work on letting go of grasping, they wanted to look at all phenomena that we could possibly crave, desire, and hold on to, and see that that there wasn't even anything to hold on to. And because everything was empty, everything was such. Dogen gives us a little hint on suchness when he says this practice of sitting is dropping body and mind. So with body and mind dropped off, we experience suchness. The Diamond Sutra has us look at the 32 marks of the Buddha. The top notch, for instance, the beam of light coming out between his eyebrows, for instance, the long earlobes, for instance, those 32 marks. And the Diamond Sutra says, they're empty. Those marks, we don't get caught by those marks. We don't say, you know, that top notch, it's a little bit out of place. Or we don't say, those ears are a little too long. We don't get caught by these marks. We don't land on these marks. We don't hold on tightly to these marks. My mother had brown hair, and then it got increasingly gray as she got older. But, you know, I'm not holding on so tightly to the color of my mother's hair. That's not what defines my mother for me. She could have been a blonde or a redhead or any color of hair. That was one of her marks that didn't catch me, that I didn't hold on to. So that's what the Buddha means by suchness or emptiness, or not being caught by marks. The 32 marks of the Buddha, or the marks that we identify anything with. We're just not holding on so much. With this dropped off body and mind, we don't get caught by the marks of discrimination. We don't discriminate. The Buddha's ears aren't too long. My mother's hair wasn't too brown. We're not caught. This This Mahayana teaching is called the second turning of the wheel. Not only are we watching how we grasp, but there's really nothing to hold on to. We're not caught by marks. And maybe there's nothing there to begin with. Maybe everything is empty of anything you can possibly hold on to. In the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha says, the supreme, perfect wisdom is understanding suchness, is the nature of all phenomenon is empty, is just such, is just as it is without any fixed identifying marks that we can hold on to, that we can get caught by. And I want all of you arhats and bodhisattvas that are listening to me talk about the Lotus Sutra, the teaching in the Lotus Sutra. I want you all to know that now you're ready to hear this unsurpassed, complete, perfect wisdom that opens your heart and connects you with other people in the Sangha. This, I haven't taught this before, but everyone is ready now. And as a matter of fact, the only reason us Buddhas come into the world is to teach this unexcelled, complete, perfect wisdom. And only Buddhas can understand this. And as a matter of fact, you're all Buddhas here. Only Buddhas with other Buddhas can sit and experience the universe as just such, filled with heart. What was Kokyo saying? This universe that is empty but filled with radiant, clear light. And only Buddhas with other Buddhas, only a Buddha and a Buddha can understand and experience the universe this way. I know many of you in the audience, the Buddha was saying, my arhat disciples have completely let go of all of your grasping, and maybe you're listening to me from nirvana, or maybe you're about to extinguish everything and enter the complete extinguishment of nirvana. But I want you to know that there's this one more part of the journey to experience unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. That radiant light that fills the universe. It's not just the extinguishing of all desires. You've practiced so hard just to sort of be snuffed out. That was kind of the dullness, the stiffness of my earlier teaching. You've practiced too hard And I think the reason you're staying in this practice is because you have felt that clear, luminous, open heart that comes with dropping off body and mind and recognizing the suchness of our existence. I think you've experienced that, and that is the Buddha's wisdom. This is the Buddha's practice, and this is why Buddhas come into the world. I'm glad you've followed along so far and practiced as hard as you've practiced, and now you're ready for this Buddha practice and this Buddha mind. This is what the Buddha was teaching in the Lotus Sutra and in the Diamond Sutra and all the Prajnaparamita Sutras. This luminous Buddha body, mind, and heart. Dogen says that this flower of the universe, this flowering Dharma, which is the universe, turns the flowering universe of our experience. The Dharma blossom turns the Dharma blossom. The Buddha lands of 10 directions are just Dharma blossoms. Here, all Buddhas of the 10 directions in the past and present who abide in the unsurpassed, complete enlightenment, turn Dharma blossoms and are turned by Dharma blossoms. In this way, there is the original practice of bodhisattvas, not turning back or veering away. There is the most profound, immeasurable wisdom of Buddhas. There is the serene, subtle samadhi that is difficult to comprehend and difficult to enter. Manjushri, the awakened one, speaks of the Dharma blossom in the Lotus Sutra as the ocean of Buddha lands where only Buddhas are together with Buddhas. Shakyamuni Buddha speaks of Dharma blossoms this way. I know form as suchness. So do Buddhas in the 10 directions. He then says, the Buddhas in the 10 directions, and I know it well. And I want sentient beings to open themselves and enter this realization. Wei Nung, the sixth ancestor, who was practicing suchness and teaching suchness several hundred years after the Lotus Sutra emerged, taught with this verse, when your mind is deluded, you are turned by the Dharma blossoms. When your mind is enlightenment, you turn the Dharma blossoms. That's a nice way to look at moving in the world. When we remember the Dharma blossom of our life, we are in that cart we're driving that cart. Sometimes, though, if we forget, if someone cuts us off on the freeway, if somebody else won the primary, we forget the Dharma blossom of our life. But as a matter of fact, the Buddhas in the 10 directions still support us. They keep driving that cart so that when we remember the Dharma blossom of our life, we go, oh yeah, this life is the Dharma blossom. I can take over the reins on the cart now. I can steer right now. Thank you for keeping us on the road, keeping us on the path. I can steer now. Dongshan taught a lot about suchness, and we looked at some of his teachings on suchness in the Sesshin to open the practice period. He said, if you want to be a person of suchness, practice suchness right away. And what is this practice? What is this practice of suchness? You know, it's pretty easy. It's just leading with the mind and heart of Buddha. It's just leading with the heart. You know, our heart is not discriminating. When our heart is open, it doesn't see brown hair. It doesn't see big ears. It just is open and accepts everything. And it's not caught by any marks. It's just open, and the world enters into our big heart. And this is the practice of a person of suchness. It's my experience on the cushion in some dark and cold mornings, not a place that I would usually think of as a warm, comfortable place to come here at 5:45 in the dark and sit in the cold. But when I drop off body and mind with a breath here or a breath there, I experience my heart opening up. I think there's kind of a physiologic connection between, you know, just, you know, we start off saying, okay, I'll calm myself, even though it's a little cold in here. I'll calm myself. I'll keep my thoughts to a minimum. I'll let go of these thoughts. Uchiyama says, you know, these thoughts are just clouds through the open sky. I'll start that practice. And pretty soon, even though I start with a little effort, pretty soon, maybe with a breath here or a breath there, not maybe the whole 40 minutes, but pretty soon I just kind of fall into this breath and this body. And I'm not distinguishing marks of too cold, too dark, too sleepy. I've just fallen into this breath and body. And you know, by the end of the 40 minutes, I'm really glad to be here. And I'm really glad to be among the other people that have come here on an early cold morning and participated in this practice. Or these people that have carved out a whole Saturday to come and sit together. All of a sudden, you know, despite all the marks that caught me earlier in the morning, I'm really glad to be with everybody. I think it's just this practice of dropping body and mind, this practice of not being caught by marks, this practice of not discriminating this or that, not discriminating too cold or too sleepy or too dark. I think that it's an automatic opening of the heart, this organ that doesn't discriminate, that accepts everything. So practicing suchness, being a person of suchness, is easy. It's just opening your heart. It's just leading with your heart, leading with the organ that doesn't discriminate, that's open to everything. I think that's the, it's a physiologic connection. You can't separate them. And I think the arhats felt that even when they weren't practicing unsurpassed, complete, perfect wisdom. I think they kept following the Buddha from forest to forest, from monsoon season to monsoon season, because, you know, their practice of sitting with the Buddha and the Sangha and giving up holding on to their desires, holding on to things. I think they felt their heart open. I want to do this again tomorrow. I'll go to the next forest retreat. I'll sign up for the next sesshin. I'll sign up for the day sit. I think the arhats felt that, and that's why they weren't surprised by the Buddha's new teaching. The Buddha was actually saying what they had felt for the 40 years of Buddha's teaching and practicing with the Buddha. Buddha was finally saying it. Yes, this is what we feel. No wonder we're still here. The Buddha, in the Lotus Sutra, even describes another bodhisattva. The bodhisattva not disparaging was his name. I will never disparage you, bodhisattva. The Buddha tells of this young monk whose practice was greeting everyone he saw as his teacher, as the Buddha. This young one, not disparaging, really understood the Lotus Sutra. When Buddha says that everyone here is a Buddha and will have their own Buddha field, the young monk, "I will not disparage you," really understood that. And everyone he saw, he opened his heart because he saw the Buddha right there in front of him. And he didn't see marks of, you know, "Oh, this Buddha is dressed one way, this Buddha is dressed another way." He just saw everyone was a Buddha, and he did a full prostration. And as a matter of fact, some of the other monks were a little irritated by this practice of being bowed to all the time and seeing, "I will not disparage you," you know, bowing in front of everybody. And they would throw rocks at him sometimes. And "I will not disparage you, Buddha," or a young bodhisattva monk. He was so good. He didn't even see those marks as someone throwing a rock at me. Maybe my heart shouldn't be open to this person throwing a rock. He didn't even get caught by that. Even the rock throwers were his teachers. So the Buddha gives us a little direction, a little lesson on how do we keep our hearts open. How do we keep our hearts open all day? Once we leave here, where our hearts are open, we kind of are connected to everyone who gave up their Saturday to come sit here. But then, how do we keep that heart open? And the Buddha says, just take the example of, "I will not disparage you, Bodhisattva," who just saw everyone as his teacher, as the Buddha that they were, the Buddha that was already a person of suchness. As we found out in the Sashin, that the next line Dongshan said was, if you want to be a person of suchness, practice suchness right away. But since you are already a person of suchness, why worry about it? So this seeing everyone as a Buddha is really easy. It's just opening our hearts. We all know sitting facing the wall, sometimes our mind drifts off into delusion, and we start thinking about what we have to do for the rest of the day. But then when we remember, when we feel that the flower, the petals of that Dharma flower just touch our skin, just brush against our skin a little bit, and we remember the Dharma flower of our life, it just takes, you know, it takes no effort at all for our minds to turn back facing the Dharma flower of our life. You know, we're still sitting here. Michael and I are sitting facing out, and we're seeing the backs of you. You know, from our perspective, you're just the Dharma flower all the time. We don't even realize that sometimes you slip away into delusion, but then you feel the Dharma flower and you come back. It's so easy. It's just your mind is over here, and then it's so easy. You just go like this, and you're back experiencing the Dharma flower of your life again. In the beginning of the Shakyamuni Buddha starts preaching the Lotus Sutra, you know, first of all, he's in a deep meditation while everybody is coming in to listen to the sutra. The Buddha is in meditation, and he comes out of meditation, and before he starts preaching, Mandarava blossoms, petals. Mandarava petals shower out of the sky and just start touching people's skin as it goes to the ground. And that's all it takes for us to remember, just that slightest touch, and we remember the Dharma flower of our life. And we once again are back turning the Dharma flower of the universe for all beings. Suzuki put it in some other words. What the Buddha meant was that mountains, trees, flowing water, flowers and plants, everything as it is the way Buddha is. It means everything is taking Buddha's activity, each thing in its own way. Everything is just the Buddha's Mandarava garden, just coming down and stroking your cheek. What we see or what we hear is just a part or a limited idea of what we actually are. But when we just are, each just existing in her own way, we are expressing Buddha's heart. In other words, when we practice something like Zazen, then there is Buddha's way or Buddha nature. When we ask what Buddha nature is, it vanishes. But when we just practice, we have full understanding of it. Buddha mind and body that we are has come to be called Buddha nature. This person of suchness that we already are, because as Dongshan says, we already are a person of suchness, because we already are Buddha nature. We just need that little whiff of the fragrance of the lotus to help us remember to open our hearts, which is the unsurpassed, complete, perfect wisdom of the Buddha. Maybe we'll have time now to practice that. We can do a little walking meditation and then sit once again. Thank you. May the merit of the fragrant of the wondrous lotus and the touch of the Mandarava flowers drive us in our carts to open our hearts and save all beings endlessly. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.